This is Leo Babeu for KTWH Two Harbors Community Radio in our eighth year, hard to believe, on the air as we had our anniversary in September. And September is when we started thinking about fall leaf color change, right about when we first encountered my guest here today, Michaela Rice, who is the naturalist up at Gooseberry Falls State Park. Welcome, Michaela, to the station again.
Thank you.
This is our third time at it, and now today we've officially decided we're going to talk all about tree leaf color change, and it was a non-starter back when we first talked. That was why we kind of put it off, because for one reason or another, the 2022 season for color change was a little delayed, and I was going to ask you if you could comment on what you have found out about the factors, the environmental or other factors that might account for that.
Well, I think it's pretty agreed upon in the scientific community that the leaf color change is primarily driven by the days in that chunk of time. But if we want to look up to what could be affecting fall color change leading up to the fall, we'd want to think about drought and overall health of the leaves. So obviously drought causes some damage to the plant, puts a lot of stress on the tree. So we'd imagine that the trees might not have enough energy to go through that full color change in the fall, or if they have some disease or something, the leaves will just turn yellow or be drop off early. I think it has been a pretty steady summer, maybe a little bit above average in rainfall up here. And I think we did have a pretty warm September, and so I just don't think it was quite cool enough to start that leaf color change a few weeks ago when you and I were talking.
Right. You know,
obviously the daylight's not really going to be affected by much, so that's always going to come at the same time every year.
Yeah, the length of the days, that's kind of written it. Well,
in the
even
stars.
That even that flows, ebbs and flows. Somebody had to point out to me that's why we have leap years, because we have to do catch up, but we shift time-wise by tiny amounts. But September of 2022 and September of 2021 pretty much had the same kind of day length. But we did have a legitimate drought last year in this neck of the woods. They still have a drought in other parts of the state that is probably affecting leaf color change dramatically.
Yeah.
We're just going through the cycle a little later, it seems, and I was going to ask you, it seems that the overnight low temperature passing the freezing mark I'm gathering that it's a signal of some sort to the tree physiologically.
Yeah, and when it's cool at night, it prevents that sugar sap that's being created in the daytime from going down into the leaves. So it keeps that sugar in the leaves during those cold nights, which is crucial. That's what makes that really red color.
Yeah.
The concentration of sugar is really what's driving the color change. And so if you think about temperature, warming sugar, you know, it changes what we call the viscosity, the density, and how easily that liquid will flow. And so that's kind of the big chemistry, concept at play there.
As a former sugar bush worker myself who collected the sap in the spring, we looked for an overnight low that would be below freezing, and a sunny day between 35 and 45. And after a cold night, you could rest assured that sugary sap was going to be flowing heavily.
Yeah,
I haven't thought that much about the inverse process in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling me that's pivotal.
Yeah, so we're kind of going through the reverse process here. All the sugar is coming down from the leaves instead of coming up from the roots through the transportation system that you are after in the early spring. So
yeah,
it's doing the opposite, and it's preparing those leaves so they obviously don't need them in the winter. One thing I found really interesting is that it's beneficial to shed leaves because they can get obviously really damaged, and they can also cause a lot of extra weight for the tree in the winter. And then you think of all the snow on top of that, how damaging it would be to those huge deciduous trees that we have. So in a way, it's also preventing some catastrophic injuries for them over the winter by dropping a lot of that biomass and, you know, preserving their.
So you're kind of talking about the evolution of deciduous trees.
Yeah,
why they have a need to let go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially in a time, well, there's far less photosynthetic activity possible in those months where it's so much darker anyway.
Yeah, and the cloud cost benefit, cover.
Mm-hmm. The cost benefit mm-hmm. for trying to function in really cold weather might not be there. But we have another kind of tree, the conifers, the evergreens. I'm trying to remember my terminology.
No,
here.
You got it. You
the
got
coniferous
it.
Trees yep. in general have decided that they can have a really small leaf surface and just have gazillions of them.
Yep, and they have a waxy coating on the outside that prevents the moisture from getting out.
Okay,
and then
conserving moisture.
Yeah, they actually have antifreeze chemicals in their cells that also help prevent that tissue from freezing. So they have a few adaptations, and yeah, they can keep that tissue alive during the winter, and then for tamaracks, for whatever reason.
I was going to surprise you with tamaracks.
I already got you.
Michaela, I was saving that because I knew that you had come from the southern part of the state, and I thought mm-hmm. maybe you hadn't encountered any tamaracks.
Oh, no, they're a longtime favorite of mine.
Oh, aren't they beautiful?
Yeah, when we drive up to my family cabin in Aiken County, you know, even from the suburbs and stuff, I would notice, yeah, that those pine trees are yellow. Why are they yellow, Dad? And so I knew what tamaracks were, but they're always a special find when I do see them.
So are tamaracks are shedding these needles that turn yellow or not?
They do, but they have not started yet.
Yeah. Well, they're starting to glow. They're not green anymore in my neighborhood. They're starting to be a kind of an off fluorescing green yellow.
Okay.
So I predict that in the next 5 to 10 days, we're going to have those glowing. Mm. I mean, they really do blaze.
Yeah, ours
yellow.
Are still green, so you're a little ahead, I guess.
Oh, and you have tamaracks in the park? Because
yeah, we do.
I wasn't sure you would,
we do.
Because you usually see them near wetland, at least, if
yeah,
not in
I
it.
Yeah, I think we have enough water in our soil, and they're kind of, they pop up randomly. We even have them around our parking lot in our visitor center, and they are thriving. They are very large tamaracks. They're next to cedars and white pines.
Yes, I was going to point out that even though we're led to believe that there are tamarack swamps and people think they're a swamp tree, but we see them in upland places all the time. It's just...
I think they do really well in the bogs and not other trees. They, you know, maybe not thrive in the acidity and the constant water logging, so they outcompete.
They can dominate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So darn it, we've already covered coniferous trees that change color as well. And then... we're all typically thinking of the most glorious, intense yellow, orange, reds, and generally those are still the maples. But there are underdog trees, too, that still contribute, to, you know, because in some places there aren't that many maples. So there's still plenty of color happening. Can you speak to the other hardwoods?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think up in this area. You're testing me because I'm still kind of a transplant about, you know, I always think of more of the low-lying shrubs. You know, maybe not native, but the sumac is incredible. You know, that goes through those really bright color changes. But off air, we had mentioned ash really isn't a candidate for that.
No,
aspen
they've
stays
already
pretty
done their
yellow.
Trip. The ash have, at my house, they're already withered leaves, and then they have those seed or whatever those structures are that are at the ends of the tree. So they're interesting to look at, but not like as exciting as a sugar or red maple. Yeah.
Yeah, and one fun fact I did want to put out is that red, crimson, dark purple color, you know, it's kind of shades of red, but that actually isn't produced until the sugar concentrate in the leaves gets really high. So in other plants like cranberries, apples, strawberries, that anthocyanin is produced in that fruit, but in the case of the leaves, that pigment is not produced until the signs, aka high sugar concentration, goes up. There seems to be a few ideas of why that anthocyanin is produced in this phase of trees, but it obviously, you know, is for other purposes if other fruits and stuff have that, you know, throughout their whole life.
It'd been in my impression that whatever color we see when the green goes is just really the chlorophyll going away.
Yes. Yeah, so that
green is no longer reflected.
Yep. And that's when the carotenoid, that yellow and orange, comes in. All leaves can have that carotenoid pigment while also having chlorophyll. And so when that chlorophyll goes down, that's why the yellow is the first thing you see, is because as that chlorophyll is breaking down, those leaves have that already. They don't have to produce that carotenoid like they do the red pigment.
Okay. So I guess subject for more study is exactly when most of these species are supercharged to make the red pigment, because I don't know when is the, I have
well,
no idea when the sugar content
yeah,
is
well,
highest.
Well, I guess only the tree knows, right? Because that's on a daily thing for them, whether that they have a lot of sun that day, they can produce that sugar. You know, sugar concentration can change quickly. They're
true.
A factory. Their sugar, you know,
yep.
can change day to day, hour to hour. So we don't know when though.
And it's all related to a deciduous tree trying to properly move its stores of carbohydrates where it needs them, whether for winter storage
mm-hmm.
or for growth in the summer.
After it makes it, which it's still kind of making sugar right now. But yep, it'll make the sugar and then it's got to figure out where to put it.
You're suggesting to me that as long as I see green in the leaves, they're probably the photosynthetic process is what's continuing to build sugars.
Yeah, and I think even if you can't see the chlorophyll, there's still enough there right now because the leaf is alive
okay.
and it's still producing sugar. It's just not repairing all that chlorophyll. That's not its first priority right now, but it's
I wouldn't have thought
still,
so. I would have thought it's
yeah.
trying to like put on fat like a bear might for winter,
yeah,
but not
yeah.
fat. Obviously
mm-hmm.
trees aren't putting on fat, or you could maybe tell me they in fact are, but I wouldn't.
Make me feel
that.
Better if trees got a little chubby too, but no, unfortunately not.
No. Great. Michaela Rice is with us today from Gooseberry Falls State Park. So, Michaela, it looks like we still have a couple of more weeks before the last of the color changes will pass through, because they're going to be probably fuller color change right now inland, and it's finally coming to the shoreline. I know I've heard people saying that right along the lake, they've
mm-hmm.
hardly been able to tell that there's been much color change. You see it, though, now, right along the lake at Gooseberry?
Yeah, within the past week.
Okay.
That orange and then some of our maples, you know, on the top of the ridge got bright red. So I still think we have, knock on wood, pending any crazy storms or anything, you know, we still have some progression left. I would say we're only at
yeah.
70, 60%.
Yeah, I was going to say 50 to 75,
mm-hmm.
and it depends upon where you are at this point. You just mentioned kind of the dreaded word, if we have stormy weather or gales of any sort, even without rain or the S word,
mm-hmm.
we can mm-hmm. go from having peak color to having the leaves just kind of disappear overnight.
Yeah, they just get stripped. So
nothing.
We gotta appreciate it, you know, as we have it every day. We don't know when it's gonna
right.
leave us.
So I guess I was looking for like advice to the savvy traveler. If somebody's coming a distance to see the leaves of the Northland, if you see that heavy wind is projected for 2 or 3 days from now, you might have to just get on up here right,
yeah.
right now,
mm-hmm.
don't you think?
Yeah, and keep your fingers crossed.
Have you been checking day-to-day the temperature measurements? Have you had the hard frost that we've had inland along the lake?
No, I don't like to look at those things. Remember, I'm kind of like still in the denial phase that
oh,
it's getting colder, but
I'm going to say the letter S again. What does the letter S indicate in your mindset?
It's snow. It really
yeah.
is, but yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, one of these days, if we have a conversation every 2 weeks, one of these days you might have to tell me you're having a hard time getting over to the studio coming from work because of the S word.
Mm-hmm.
anyway, so Michaela, anything else going on in the month of October at Gooseberry that's worth noting, that activities?
Well, I do have a few more small programs coming up. So yeah, please check out the Minnesota State Parks and Trails events calendar. Like I mentioned last time, that's where all my programs are listed. And I'm just preparing for our community nature craft creations. And that is happening on the third Friday of every month. So this third Friday of October, I believe it's the 21st, we are meeting at 5:30 in Lady Slipper Lodge. And I'm just excited to start being crafty and meeting some folks. And yeah, I'm just trying to make a space that's comfortable for anyone to come and be creative, and we share ideas and supplies with one another. So that's my goal for that. So please come and bring your friends. Like I said, all ages are welcome. And
well, that is wonderful. But that event at the Lady Slipper on the 21st, again, is at what time?
It's at 5:30
to 7.
5:30 to 7.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they don't have to bring any of their own
no.
natural materials?
Nope.
But
I'll have lots
to?
Of stuff
great.
Provided as
okay.
well, and ideas. If you don't have one yet.
Great. And to catch up on some old unfinished business, I think we were talking excitedly the last time about a really neat online tool for tracking migrations. Do you recall, can you share with the audience that web link?
Yeah, so I was looking at Birdcast, and it's a website with lots of different tools on it. I believe I was on the main page, and it's got the migration tracker on that.
Specific to wherever you want to look, then?
Yeah, it's not just United States-wide.
Okay. Not mm-hmm. just the upper Midwest, it's Correct. Got it all. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you're vicariously wondering, I know what they're doing above Lake Superior. I don't know what they're doing.
Or if you're traveling, like my parents are going to Florida in a few weeks, I should have them look and see what birds are going down there. Or
sure.
Yeah, we have bird friends moving all over the country.
And I know you've been so busy, you haven't had a chance to check what the latest is from the raptor watchers or anything.
I have not, but I'm going this weekend, and I'll see there's any new stories or interesting events. I did see more of a local page, but I thought it was really interesting that someone up here on the shore found a black vulture. The nearest typical population for black vultures is down like by Oklahoma.
Oh.
I've seen them in Texas, and so this one was pretty far off, but it doesn't have any really coloration on the body, and the tips of the wings are silver, and so they had a state biologist or something confirm, and it was a black vulture. So, yeah, I know some birds kind of get out of their flyway zone, and we had like a lone dark juvenile snow goose on the shore, my coworker told me the other day. So I thought that was pretty interesting. No snow geese friends around, but he was just a lonely one hanging out.
And these are essentially naturalist mysteries. They don't necessarily usually get solved what turned this particular individual around.
Correct. Or if it ever returns, you know, maybe if it was banded, but how it got lost, usually, there's no way to tell.
Wow.
Or even where it came from, unless it was banded as, you know, a young bird. But hopefully they'll make it back where they're supposed to go. Not the black vulture. But
it's kind of tough if you're the only black vulture for 500 miles. That's could be a lonely niche that doesn't pan
and
out.
For some birds that get like picked on or can't compete, I mean, that's probably not a very good outlook, but I guess those things happen.
Wow. Each time I talk to you, Michaela, there's another story about something I didn't know about last time I learned about how to transplant feathers. And so you just keep those neat facts coming, and we will enjoy having you on the radio.
Sounds great.
Thank you so much, Michaela. We'll see you maybe in a couple of weeks.
All right. Take care, Leo.
Thank you. Bye now. That's Michaela Rice. She is the naturalist up at Gooseberry Falls State Park. This is Leo for KTWH.